Good morning. I'll bet Mrs. McCutcheon always said that to the kids in the morning, too, who wrote that I love you in the children's book. Well, speaking of books, the Tao Te Ching of ancient China is one of the easiest of the world's major religious scriptures to like. It may also be the shortest of them all, which can be a plus in itself. Most of the chapters are one page or less, depending on the size of the print. It features no chosen land, no chosen people, no place more holy than any other place, no apocalyptic battles at the end of the world. What matters most is the Tao, the way of nature that has no beginning or end at all. It's everywhere, always, imminent, and inescapable. The book appeals to mystics and hermits, while it also offers wisdom about public service and political action. But for centuries, it's held a special place in the hearts of those who practice martial arts like Kung Fu or Tai Chi Chuan. Most of us first learned of it from the 1970s TV show Kung Fu, starring David Carradine, because there weren't any Asian actors. And starring David Carradine, in which martial arts were depicted as a way of spiritual cultivation and so much more than just some way to fight. So do you remember the blind old monk who was always calling David Carradine what? Grasshopper, right? You know, we always see him come back in those flashbacks to his years of training. He often quoted from the Tao Te Ching, though I don't know if he ever mentioned this passage. Yield and overcome. Bend and be straight. Empty and be full. Wear out and be new. Have little and gain. Have much and be confused. Therefore, the wise embrace the one and set an example to all, not putting on a display they shine forth, not justifying themselves, they're distinguished, not boasting, they receive recognition, not bragging, they never falter, they do not quarrel, so no one quarrels with them. Therefore, the ancients say, yield and overcome. Is that an empty saying? Be really whole, and all things will come to you. Let's see what comes to us now as we rise in body or spirit and sing hymn number 347, Gather the Spirit, number 347. Thank you. That's another nice hymn. I like the way, you know, something uplifting is coming, but instead, the music goes down. I like that you kind of get uplifted by going down. It's a nice thought. Kind of a Taoist thought. Well, a few years back, I was invited to an outdoor meal and a bonfire in Kennewick. The Hogans hosted. Alex and Denise and Terry were there. Bobby and Scott, too, I think. But you get the picture. It was a gathering of some of the rowdier customers in our congregation on the tough side of Kennewick, the church kids from the wrong side of the tracks. So what follows should really be no surprise. Someone mentioned a video, an internet sensation that everyone had seen but me. When I looked confused, one of the Hogans went inside to get a laptop so that we could watch it all together. It started as an ordinary sermon led by my colleague, Dawn Cooley, the first female minister of First Unitarian Church in Louisville, Kentucky, in its almost 300-year history. She was wearing her shimmering white robe and pastel-flowered stole, special clothing that many of my colleagues like to wear, though I usually prefer not to. But I could tell right away that this was going to be a confessional sermon in which the minister reveals something about him or herself that might be surprising, but almost always comes as a relief to the congregation. Wow, so she knows what it's like to keep something like that hidden too. That is something that could mean we'll be rejected. Sometimes it's a revelation about sexuality, or a struggle with alcoholism, or some sort of abuse suffered during childhood. You can feel the tension building. Dawn walks away from the pulpit and out of the room. All's quiet for a few moments. Then a voice on the PA system says, "Please welcome the Derby City Roller Girls!" And out they roll down the church's central aisle, the local roller derby team of elbow-jabbing, rink-dominating tough chicks. The last to emerge is the good Reverend Cooley, all in black, skin-tight fighting attire, at last revealing her true warrior identity as Liv Fearless. You know, Liv like Liv Ullman, right? Liv Taylor, right? Liv Fearless, Derby Queen. The congregation goes wild. Still in her skates, she gives a lovely short sermon on the beauty we can all find inside if we'll just let it loose. And when it's over, I'm sure she's beginning to ponder, what do I do next to follow this? Lots to think about while you loosen your knee pads. What I remember best from her sermon was how she used to say, "Excuse me," after bumping into someone in the rink. Her teammates had to remind her that in roller derby, at least, bumps and jabs are the point. You're not here to be Reverend Cooley. You're here to be Liv Fearless, so better start living fearlessly, girl. As the video ended, Alex said, "When Tana and I first saw this, we wondered if maybe Craig was going to come out of the closet as an ultimate fighter." I said, not quite, but that I had spent some time as a boxer. I enjoyed leaving them all with the impression of me looking like Robert De Niro in Raging Bull, gushing blood but rushing back into the ring. That's not exactly how it was. The first time that I saw my eyeball fill up red with blood was my last day in the ring, and that came in my second month. I did spend a lot of time studying martial arts when I was in my 20s, starting with Taekwondo, the art of punching and kicking, sometimes called Korean karate. Our teacher, Mr. Lee, was a former military man who held a ninth degree black belt. He would always tell me that I was doing okay, I was very limber, but I should eat more and lift weights. It's not what I expected to hear from him. 120 pounds? You should be at least 140. At the time, I had what you could call a very spiritual build. And if you asked me, I would have said that I was drawn to the spiritual side of martial arts. And here's one writer speaking to that side. "One starts from the refinement of the protective energy, the lower or earthly soul, progresses to refinement of the vital energy, intent or will, on to refinement of the creative energy, the higher or celestial soul, then again to refinement of the basic energy and basic spirit, emptiness. Finally, one merges with the Tao, which enables human beings to attain a thoroughly fulfilling holistic harmony and coordination with the universe and with nature, and also to fully employ the results of this training to attain the goals of disinterring extraordinary latent capacities and extending the lifespan." That pretty well sums up what I was after. Nothing too ambitious. Just superpowers and near immortality. Well, later, when I was preparing for the ministry in California, I took classes with the light heavyweight champion of Taiwan's 1978 full contact martial arts tournament, an American, and the first non-Asian to ever win that honor. That might seem rude to mention these days, but it got everyone's attention at the time. At his studio, I took classes in Tai Chi and Bagua Chang, and you know what Tai Chi is, right? Tai Chi, you often think of it as standing at the center of a circle and your movements, you know, float on the center. Bagua is more walking the edge of a circle. The forms are more like this, and you're changing direction. And this, the edge becomes the center. The center becomes the edge. It's very wonderful and mystical. Well, I also helped to organize a kung fu class for kids, and I assisted in teaching that. And that earned me one free private lesson per week. And I chose for that lesson a long staff weapon that was called the Earth Dragon Stick. I came into the studio once, though, feeling tired and dragging my stick a bit carelessly. No one else was in the studio except for Peter, who was sitting in a chair, from which he arose without a word and attacked me with his own staff, jabbing and striking, chasing me around the room. It was like a scene from that old kung fu TV show. At first, I just tried to hustle away, but he kept coming. After a while, I began to respond to his attacks with movements that were less stiff, more spontaneous, and more effective than anything I would have thought I could do. After a while, we sat down and talked about what had just happened wordlessly. It had been a nice reminder of what martial arts are all about for most of us, at least in the beginning. Fear. No matter what anyone tells you, Grasshopper, one of the prime motives for studying martial arts is fear. Peter didn't call me Grasshopper, but I was fully aware that he could have smashed me like one at any time if he'd wanted to. This is the world champion. All that spiritual stuff you've read about, there's really something to it. You might have those extraordinary psychophysical experiences eventually, but if you ever want to get there, you'll have to look at what you fear. What is that? What are you afraid of? Is it something that you can name? Is it a threat to mind, body, or soul, or some combination of the three? What's the scariest thing that you can think of? Feel free to share.
Burning alive.
Burning alive. Wow. Wow. Like our founder, right? Michael Servetus. Yowie. Other fears. If you're comfortable to say.
For mine, it's just rejection.
Rejection. Rejection. Soul, kind of a real soul deep fear.
Living under the freeway in the cardboard box.
Living under a freeway in the cardboard box, kind of a rejection made very concrete, isn't it? Yeah. Others?
Something would happen to my kids.
Something happened to your kids, right?
Being trapped.
Trapped. Being trapped.
Falling.
Falling. Any diseases? Is there anything with a letter C that we're all kind of scared of? I know I am. Okay, well, thank you. I guess another question is, do you fear different things in different times or different places? Different things here in the Tri-Cities compared, let's say, to when you go to a big city. Any thoughts on that subject? Different things that you fear here and fear there?
Seattle traffic.
Seattle traffic. Another kind of... It's kind of like being rejected, kind of like being in a box all at once, isn't it? The others?
Being attacked,
being safe.
Getting lost.
Getting lost. Yeah, yeah.
Loss of freedom.
Loss of freedom. Yeah. Well, I had my best experience studying martial arts when I joined a Tai Chi club in Hyde Park on the south side of Chicago, where President Obama's family still maintains a home. It was a very integrated neighborhood, filled with academics and artists, merchants, workers, unemployed, as well as students from around the world. The special character of our neighborhood was reflected in that martial arts club. And it was a club with low monthly dues on a sliding scale instead of the contract arrangement that's common in many for-profit martial arts studios. We met twice a week in rented space. The club had been founded by Master George Hu. He was doing graduate work at a university out of state at the time, but made regular visits to Chicago, for which we waited eagerly. Most weekly meetings were led by Master Hu's senior students. And this is a really common pattern in martial arts instruction, senior students carrying most of the load with occasional visits by the master. Ours were great teachers, very humble, but at some schools, these senior students can be real pills. You get the feeling that from the very first day they started studying, they could hardly wait until they could call someone else grasshopper. That's what they're in it for, really. They want to be the ones saying grasshopper. Some become fanatically loyal to a master teacher in ways that can remind you of one little kid telling another, "My dad could beat your dad, you know." Once, when our club hosted a public demonstration, some senior students of another teacher who was based in the suburbs showed up wearing their shiny blue tunics. We always just wore street clothes. Like I mentioned before, I don't usually care to put on special single-purpose clothing. Anyway, George Hu, the master, did some delightful things, like having a whole line of people try to push him down until he threw them all off balance. We all laughed at this, all of us, but we noticed that the blue tunic kids who come to visit weren't smiling. Later, when Master Hu had left, they approached some of us. Said, "Hey, our master can do the chi touch. Can your master do the chi touch?" We had no idea. What the heck was the chi touch? They wouldn't tell us, but they exchanged knowing glances with each other. These dimwits don't even know what the chi touch is. Of course, we knew that qi was a Chinese word for one's life energy, and that higher martial arts were supposed to offer a means of channeling that energy in deliberate ways, like in that reading I shared earlier. The qi touch must have had something to do with using one's own qi to disrupt that of an opponent through simple contact, not an obvious punch or kick. But the details were obviously too much to share with a bunch of grasshoppers who didn't even have tunics. Who knows? Maybe their master was offering them something that ours didn't offer us, something we couldn't find at our club meetings. Maybe. These folks did have a certain grim and dangerous look about them, if not a very happy one. Maybe this was discomfort at visiting what they saw as a rival school. Maybe they felt nervous being on the south side of Chicago. No shame in that. Heck, even the president must feel that sometimes. It can be a scary place where our nation's painful racial history is still being written and often still in blood. Which brings me to the most obvious difference between these two groups of aspiring martial artists, the easiest one to see. They were all white, except for the master who hadn't come that day. We, on the other hand, looked like our neighborhood, black and white and brown. African Americans were a slight majority, including the top instructors after Master Hu. If any of them knew the chi touch, they never said so. But let me tell you, there was a special touch that everyone in our club had experienced, even if we didn't have a special name for it. Let's call it the Chicago touch. It's easy to describe, if maybe a little hard to understand. Maybe you could even guess what it is. Any guesses? It was people of all skin tones and eye shapes and hair textures touching each other. Touching each other in safe ways, and on a regular basis. If you've ever taken a Tai Chi class, you may have tried the practice called push hands. Two partners make contact with one or both hands, then try to lead or follow their partner's movements to anticipate and adapt to it. It can be very gentle or very vigorous. Though good teachers make sure that it's never violent. Hands and feet never move in isolation. If one part moves, all parts move, with the movement coming from the feet to the waist, which directs it to the fingertips, while each player tries to yield and overcome, bend and be straight, empty and be full. You might remember those words from the Tao Te Ching. While pushing hands or doing other exercises, we would try to put that spirit into practice. Touching the other person's hands, or even standing apart from them, we would try to feel their life force or energy, their qi, as much as our own, as much as that which filled the room, as much as that which filled the universe. I know that sounds great. I can't tell you how much anyone actually achieved it. I do know that we tried. We reached out with our fingers and with what's between our fingers. With our fingers and what's between our fingers. You might want to try that. Don't feel the fingers, feel the between. Such a touch is a little hard to describe. But I can say that this simple hand-to-hand, skin-to-skin, space-between-to-space-between contact, twice a week in a spirit of playfulness, awareness, and trust, changed everyone who took part. How many white club members had ever touched an African-American person before? How many black members had never touched the skin of a Euro-American or East Asian human being? How much of the fear that so many of us feel is due to a lack of the most basic kind of contact? I don't think that it can be achieved. I don't think that this can be achieved virtually or that there will ever be an app for it. Some things have to happen right here. Right now, right in our neighborhood, where a master teacher might be hiding under our neighbor's robes, or maybe it's a roller derby queen. We heard several people mention their greatest fear, and I spoke the one, cancer, I think, hovers over many of us. No one mentioned people trying to hit us with their fists or feet or big earth dragon sticks. But this brings me back to the master teacher of my old Chicago club. George Hu is well into his 70s now and is still teaching. His current project includes sharing martial arts techniques with cancer patients to help mitigate the effects of chemotherapy. Maybe he's teaching them the qi touch now. But even if he never learned it, even if he doesn't know it, I'm glad that I had a chance to be his grasshopper and to learn at least a little bit about living fearlessly before I hop away. I'll hop away now. Blessed be.